Well, hello, Gundam Maniacs. Welcome to the Gundam Explained Show Live. I'm your host, Adam Blue. And joining me, as always, is Steven from Midnight Hatter. What's up, man?
Oh, man, just getting off work. It's a good time to talk Gundam.
Oh, it is. It always is, you know, especially when, you know, our weeks are so much full of, like, our work and stuff and, you know, taking these nice little breaks. And if you're looking for breaks, especially if you're working and need something to listen to, we've got on Mondays on the Free Speech Geek YouTube channel, myself, Kyle, and Steven, we just talk things geek pulp culture, other cool stuff, movies, video games, Comic-Con discussion. And then, you know, obviously Steven and I, and even Kyle this last Wednesday, were on his channel. We were talking yesterday, if you guys missed it, we were diving into Moon Gundam and Advance of Zeta pretty deeply, like just talking about the lore implications of the advancement of technology, the evolution, how it makes sense. Really cool discussion.
Yeah, hopefully we triggered some people because that's...
it's fun. No, it's really fun to have Kyle as a resource and a friend that we have that joins us. And again, our show, The Free Speech Geek on Mondays, it's awesome. Speaking of awesome, we've got a show today. You know, not too much crazy Gundam stuff has been going on, really, but there's some news we'll get to.
Yeah, a handful of announcements.
Yeah. But, you know, I always ask this, and I don't even know if I have an answer. Anything Gundam-related you got into this week?
Well, I built the high-grade P-Bandai Varguil. Or as we were debating yesterday, is it Varguil? Is it Varguil? Is it Varguile? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. We will never know, actually. In fact, there's probably multiple answers now that I've learned. Just like how the canon is very open in Japan, so is the interpretation of pronunciation.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before. The amount of, I don't want to say Gundam disinformation, because it's not like it's done with malice. It's just that, you know, across the different media channels, whether it's a video game, a manga, an anime, you know, this localization of this anime as opposed to this one, you're going to run across all these different, like, just misinformation. Like some video game manuals will define the range of weapons for mobile suits wildly different than what you would see in like the MS encyclopedia or in like some of the animated guides. So it's like, what are you to trust?
That's always fun, though, and I feel like that's something we sometimes subconsciously do. Like, I like the ideas as we're exploring Gundam lore. You do this a lot on your show. We come across something that, okay, there's multiple sources of information here. What's the truth here? And then we kind of just talk about it on the show, and that usually is pretty fun.
Yeah, actually, related to that point, yesterday we were talking about battleship sizes and the largest ship in the UC. And as it turns out, it was not the Gwadin. It was, in fact, the General Revel by about 30 meters. The Gwadin is 600 meters long. The General Revel is 630.
Okay.
Well, so look at that fact check.
That ship would be the biggest, you know?
Yeah, you know.
No, but pretty cool. Well, speaking of battleships, so I'm continuing to watch more Battlestar Galactica. I'm now in season two.
One of us.
And, dude, this show is so much better than I could have imagined. And, in fact, like, a lot of when I was watching season one, to me, it looked like a mess. It's doing so much. It's crazy. Yeah. But I think it looks that way because it's trying to do so much, and it's almost impossible to do. So I bet they're like, you know what? It's fine if we have to cut corners in some areas in order to properly tell this insane story. Then I almost feel like, nowadays, a producer or the execs would be like, let's cut this out. Let's cut this out.
To the detriment of the show. I mean, you know, I think that they kind of let Ronald D. Moore do whatever he wanted with that show while it was running. And, you know, it's got such a huge cast of characters. You start bouncing around from like, oh, you know, Hilo's on Earth with, you know, well, I don't want to spoil anything for those of you who haven't seen it, but with a person of Cylon descendantry. You're like, well, why is this relevant to everything else that's going on? It's like everything kind of has to play out. So honestly, I think you said this either on the first Free Speech Geek podcast or on one of our shows where it was, man, if Ronald D. Moore got the rights to do a Gundam TV show, that would be...
Yeah, like Zeta period, the politics... the different, yeah, bouncing around to different, it makes it seem like, I know it's TV versus movies, but it makes it seem like he would do great for like an Avengers style thing or Justice League where you have all of these characters.
Yeah. Cause I don't know. Have to juggle all those different storylines.
Yeah. And just thinking how different like superheroes are versus a sci-fi story, which kind of has superheroes, but that's not the point really.
Yeah.
In sci-fi. But the thing that I take away for sure from Battlestar Galactica is the dogfights are the coolest. And I'm in terms of like how they're shot. Cause even though it's CGI, the thing we talk about is they don't make the camera seem like a CGI character. The camera might be fixed to a wing or it's slowly floating in space as you're seeing the depth of field of the battle that's taken place. And even the momentum of the ships, because I love how they'll fly, but then they'll quickly like turn because they're in space, you know, they're
not. And so I'm glad that you brought up that, you know, just the physical movement of the ships in that show, because they really do a good job of representing that there's no drag, there's no wind resistance that they're fighting with. And so, you know, it's kind of silly sometimes when you watch a space battle and you see this huge arcing turnaround and it's like, you don't have to do that. Like, yeah. As soon as you cut the momentum, like nothing's going to keep you can. Oh, man, can you imagine the type of hairpin turns you could pull off like in space?
Right. So that's what's interesting, because I think a lot of what's informed our viewing experiences of space battles happens to mainly be what came out of Star Wars because of the special effects at that time, making it look so real, but not necessarily that we know what physics in space look like. So we're just relating it to what physics on Earth would look like. And to be honest, I mean, that's you almost can't fault anyone for that at that time, you know, because it was just amazing to make something look that way. And it always reminds me of when you're pulling off special effects, the thing in the episode one making of where when they were like painting to look like there was bird droppings on one of the speeders.
That's so awesome.
George Lucas was like, no, make it bigger than it would be in real life. Because it's a miniature, so you're trying to like give off that's what's happening, not that it's super accurate. And so I think that's what he was doing with the space battles. We can't really, if we were to show how accurate it would be, it wouldn't make as much sense as if we had these models that then looked like they were in space and shooting. Have you watched anything else that is maybe similar or better than Battlestar Galactica with this space combat?
Well, the one example I always go back to, and I don't know if this is the best one, but there's that 80s movie, The Last Starfighter. You know, I think that because there was an argument going on. Well, I mean, there's always an argument going on Twitter about something, but there was an argument going on Twitter about like, oh, realistic space combat. And we need to make sure that there's no fires going on in space because there's no oxygen. So fire can't exist.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I mean, if you really want realistic space combat, it's going to be like The Last Starfighter, where it's like the ship that doesn't move forward or backward. It just spins around like a goofy and, you know, it's just like, okay, it's an omnidirectional firing vector because.
Yeah.
Because you can do that.
And then another thing to think about, though. So if we were to think about space combat, especially how it's done in Gundam, a lot of it takes place in gravitational systems. So even if they're in space, they're probably still in Earth gravity or moon gravity or an object's gravity. So I wonder if then you can say, well, there will be some bit of that going on, you know? Because in Gundam, we do see mobile suits are moving crazy and fast. And so that pulls that off. But also, you know, it has the core fighters, ship battles. And I think even though it's animation in general, Gundam does a good job of pulling that off.
I would say so. But so then you haven't gotten into anything Gundam specifically this week.
No.
Just other sci-fi.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was my thing. Like I was.
Did you at least log into GBO2 and pick up your anniversary polls? No.
I haven't logged into GBO2 in a while. Like I played the crap out of that game for myself personally, where I mean, I'll probably go back to it, but oh man, not anytime soon. I played so much of that game.
Because the Penelope comes out today, right?
Yeah. Something like that today. Yeah. It's so awesome stuff too. But I like it because, you know, part of me is like, oh, I need to log in and get it. But I'm like, no, it will be there somehow eventually, especially at the end of service time where Because I like GBO2 as kind of like a collection or a museum, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, it does make me sad that it's, you know, one day it is going to go away. Like, they're going to shut the servers down and, like, you're just not going to be able to log in and even look at your old mobile suits, which kind of sucks. But I wish that they had, like, at least a semi-offline mode.
Yeah, these companies need to do that. And it's funny, we've seen video game companies in the past actually patch in offline modes. So it can happen. So Lucas Garrett is saying The Last Starfighter, like you brought up, or Babylon 5 come to mind. I've never watched that.
Yeah.
Never watched it, but I know what it is because it was a big deal when it was out.
Yeah, that was really popular. It's like that. And then what is that sci-fi show that everyone always is The Expanse?
Firefly? Oh, Expanse. Yeah.
I've not seen it myself, but everyone always recommends The Expanse.
The problem I have with it seems to be, and I got to like season 3 or 4, is the problem I was having with the Picard season 1 and 2 was like, it's super dark, and maybe that's the purpose of it, but it was, I just didn't feel I was enjoying being in that universe. Like, what's cool about Battlestar Galactica is the play on hope in terms of not only religion, but also just finding yourself in that world. Where dark things can happen, but you can relate to what you have to do in life to move past certain obstacles. So
it is very interesting. And you and I have talked about this, I think, privately, is where, you know, in Battlestar Galactica, like the newer show from 2004, there's this interesting play going on where the Cylon behavior is more human and the human behavior is more, I don't want to say robotic, but it's like everything is so politically driven on their side that like their humanity has been stripped away.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about, like, you know, this kind of inversion of what you would expect. Is that subverting expectations? Is that what that's called?
But doing it in a way that's relatable, you know, it's kind of like when we talk about how some Gundam is animated, where it's like, well, why was that way? And it's kind of real life. Even if it seems odd. And, you know, I keep going back, like with Battlestar Galactica, like I love how well they craft bouncing around between the different characters. But then, like, sometimes I prefer if they would stick on one thing for a while, like the idea, like Starbuck being kind of back at her home for a little bit, you know, like that was kind of an interesting thing because of the world building implications there. I love that. And that character is really great. So, that actress, I've only ever seen her in as the Mandalorian character.
Yeah.
The name. I even have the
action figure. Bo-Katan.
Yeah, Bo-Katan. Yeah. I saw her in the Chronicles of Riddick, one of the Riddick movies. She was in one of them. But the character she plays in this, like, you wouldn't think she was like a younger actress because she plays it completely different from her Mandalorian character and plays like a hotshot pilot. Like exactly what you'd want from a hotshot pilot. And so that's actually been my favorite part of the show, even though they don't, so far, there's not as much focus on her as there is like Odama, the president, all that. So.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's what do they call that character? Like the Lancer, right? It's like they're not the main protagonist, but they're like almost like a rival to the main protagonist, which is kind of what it was in like the 70s show where it's like Apollo and Starbuck were both male pilots in the 70s. And like, you know, it was like, okay, well, Apollo is the main character, but then, you know, Starbuck is like his, you know, sidekick that also happens to be like maybe a better pilot than him. But then in the newer series, it's like they almost didn't know what to do with Apollo to a certain extent.
Yeah, sometimes there's decisions he makes where I'm like,
Yeah, it's like Lee Adama is kind of not a very compelling character in that show. And so it's like you almost feel like Starbuck is the main character because of how a lot of her actions drive what happens in the story. So
yeah. So I'm super excited that this show is good. I love it when people say watch a show and then I watch it. I'm like, wow, I can't believe it's actually like this. You know,
like how many times do you actually get a TV show recommendation that you're like,
Yeah. I mean, I've had, and I know people are going to hate me for this, but like Breaking Bad and, what is it? The Castle Dragons.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And they could be good, but from the starting it, like especially Breaking Bad is depressing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that. And then with Game of Thrones, and this is probably a personal problem, it was like slow. I didn't know what direction. Is this fantasy, half fantasy, full fantasy? I wasn't too sure. But
yeah.
I know there's a current new show based on that right now that everyone likes. Are you watching it?
No, my wife and I actually were just talking about that today, House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
And you know what came up was actually the conversation that we had with Kyle, where it's like, what defines a good TV show to you? And like, can you name a good TV show that you would never go back and watch again?
Oh.
And Game of Thrones is one of those shows that it's like my wife and I really enjoyed it, but I wouldn't see the value in going back and watching it again, because if you already know like all of the, you know, the dramatic twists of the knife, and it's like, oh, well, I know that this character is going to die, so like none of this entire season matters. So it's like, but what's fascinating is I don't have that with Gundam. And I mentioned that to her as I was like, no matter how many times I rewatch Zeta Gundam, even though I know like what's going to happen, I don't feel like, oh yeah,
I know that is so interesting, isn't it? How there's some things that we can watch over and over. That's a fun discussion, actually. Yeah, throw in chat if there's a show or movie that you watched in limited amount of times and it doesn't matter, because that's actually a cool discussion.
I like that that qualifier where it's like, what's a movie that you really enjoyed that you never want to watch again?
Yeah,
like,
that's interesting too, because I mean, there's things I've enjoyed. Like, for instance, The Prestige is a movie that comes up where I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't watch it again. I think it's The Prestige, the one with Christian Bale and he had a twin.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Like, cool concept. And then wasn't there another movie that came out at the same time?
The Illusionist.
The Illusionist.
With Edward Norton.
Yes. That was good.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So it's hard for me to think of something that I liked that I wouldn't watch again. I know when we were talking about this on Monday, the TV show The Wire was a good example, where I felt like The Wire is one of my favorite shows ever. So I was going to watch it again. This was a little while back, and I was just like, yeah, this is slow and I know what's going to happen. Whereas when you don't know what's going to happen, the slowness is building that up.
Exactly. And so that's like, you know, it's the tragedy of the M. Night Shyamalan film, where it's like, yeah, if like The Sixth Sense is a great movie, like I enjoyed it, but once you've seen it, it's like, nah, that's, I don't really, really
good point.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason to go back and watch an M. Night Shyamalan movie would be to try and pick out the hints that he drops towards the twist at the end, right?
Yeah, that's true. That it would be like more of an exercise.
Yeah, it's academic. It's not like just to enjoy it.
I know that, I was talking about Burn Notice is a show that I watched a second time and it was way better than I thought. Noticing that as the series went, it was one of those rare series that knows that it's prolonging its life. So it does different things every time. So I appreciate that. When it comes to like the movies I've ever watched the most in my life are Army of Darkness, Blade, and Aliens. It has to be over 50 for each one. For instance, we had Aliens on VHS, or maybe we had rented it and I recorded it, and we had this, you know, the giant camcorders. And you could put a VHS tape in and then watch through the viewfinder. And because at that time, early 90s, we just had like one TV with a VCR. I don't remember, but I would have the camcorder with the VHS in and the little earbud, and I'd watch Aliens in black and white. Like that, because
I mean that's such a unique experience. I would love to do that just as like a, you know, just as an exercise, because it's got to be so immersive, like that you're like,
because I'm sitting there like focusing, like, oh, I can't, because, you know, at that time there wasn't, in my opinion, movies as cool as Aliens. Like that was rare, you know. And then when Blade came out, I remember we went on a family trip And my dad had bought this TV VCR combo to bring just in case we're at a hotel or something. Yeah. And the first hotel we were at, it was nice, and it had movies in theater on demand, and it was Blade. So my dad recorded Blade. And so I had this copy of Blade before it even came out on home video. I remember when I got back, my mom bought like a VHS box, and I made the cover. Yeah, it was a little mini poster of Blade I put in there, and I had my own copy of Blade.
That is so awesome. Yeah. Bootlegging before it was a thing. Like,
yeah.
And you took it to the next level with the custom packaging.
But you know, it was interesting. My dad was always into movies a whole lot. Like when Mortal Kombat first came out in 93, like after it was in theaters, he would try to find how to get it at home. But from what I understand, these companies would purposely not make it for sale. They would just want you to rent it.
Yep.
And so my dad went to a Blockbuster and he got, I guess, I forget what it was, but in contact with where to buy it, and it was $100.
Wow.
So it was before they made it like available to everyone. Yeah,
available.
But it was available. It existed. But if you wanted it, you had to pay a lot. And
yeah, I thought
that was very interesting.
Well, and it's like, you know, it reminds me of that whole, did you watch, what was it called? Was it called Pam and Tommy, that Hulu series?
I didn't see it though.
About Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee's sex tape. I thought it was fascinating that, like, you know, back then, obviously you couldn't just copy a file and then paste it online all over the place. It was like you had to manually copy a VHS tape. And so they've got like these, it was such a great scene just seeing like all of these VHS machines, and they're like duping all of these VHS tapes and, like, you know, selling them by hand. And it's like,
it's crazy,
man.
The effort you would go to do things in the past, or maybe how much meaningful something was because of the effort it took, like me watching Aliens. And, you know, I still watched it in color. Anytime no one was using the VCR, I popped that in. And also, I want to say that might have also had to do with my brother being really young and my parents didn't want that. I think that was part of it.
That certainly didn't help, for sure.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and another one, Army of Darkness. I mean, if you give me a day to prepare, and I could recite the movie from beginning to end.
Oh, yeah.
That's how crazy. I even, in high school, there was a speech class about what I'm really bad at doing, you know, where you talk in front of a bunch of people.
Toastmasters, like that?
No. Public speaking.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like a normal class in high school, and one of it was to do a speaking a segment on comparing and contrasting two things that are different. And mine was comparing and contrasting the two endings of Army of Darkness, the theatrical and the alternate. Because I thought that blew my mind when I knew there was an alternate ending in Army of Darkness. I had to like tell everybody, and then the teacher was upset because she said that was too scary, and it kind of was. You get the witch and the S-smart. But at the same time, since I had the tape with me and I was in art class next, and I told the teacher, and she was cool and wanted to play it while we were drawing in art class. So.
Yeah, there's two different kinds of teachers.
Yeah.
There always has been.
Yeah. anything else on this fun little topic? I mean, well, yeah, let me ask you, what's a movie that you think you've seen more than any other movie?
Oh, man. I think, like, in my adult life, I've probably watched like Scott Pilgrim and Lord of the Rings more than like anything. But as a kid, oh man, Star Wars, A New Hope, and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure just like on repeat at my house. So,
you know what? That's funny. I bet there are so many more that I didn't realize I've watched so much. Like when you said Bill and Ted, it just reminded me of that time in the late 80s, early 90s when everything was on TV, like, and I would just watch it over and over.
Oh yeah. Well, and there's even there's a funny story from when I was a kid that my grandmama was watching me you know, one day, and we literally watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure like 13 times that day while my parents were gone, and they came back and were just livid. And she was ordering it like on pay-per-view. So
wow. That's you know what, that actually reminds me of something. So, you know, the Wolverine and Deadpool came out, and I took my youngest, he's 11, but I wanted him to experience it, and he said it's the coolest movie he's ever seen, obviously. And what's funny is him, like, loving that intro, you know, the NSYNC song that's played at the intro. Like now that song's always hearing on the phone and everything. Cause yeah, it's
all that's old is new again.
Yeah.
Funny
yeah,
how no, that works.
Seen some cool things in American Ninja and Surf Ninjas, two different types of ninja.
Yeah. There was a lot of ninja movies in the 90s. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Even not counting Ninja Turtles, which was amazing.
There you go.
Hey, that second one is another one I've probably seen so much.
Well, because the second one was definitely geared more towards kids.
The
first one, yeah. You know, had a few dams in it and all that. But like the second and third one, you can tell that they toned down the language and they like
they sped up the pacing. So there's not too much sitting and talking. I think the one thing that I picked up from Ninja Turtles 2 that I think is like foundational to like really getting someone sucked into a universe of a movie is like the beginning, how they did the intro where what's his name? Is it Eddie? The pizza boy, you know,
what is his name? Is it Eddie?
Yeah. And I even met him in real life.
How could you?
I know, right? No, but it's when like you see the shadows of the Ninja Turtles come in and then they jump and then it has like the title that is, they could have just made up some random title, but no, they used the cartoon, possibly if the comics use, I don't know, but then the music. So like that really was like, I think a good way to ever like start any type of movie, like having even Blade 2 did that, which was interesting where it played some like James Bond sounding music and then Blade's like getting all of his gear and his weapons, you know, little things like that.
Yeah. Little stuff like that definitely goes a long way. And you and I have talked about this recently where it's like, you know, there's this like, or no, I was talking to Ultronimus about it where, you know, you look at like a lot of modern superhero movies and like things like that, where it's like, you know what the name of the movie is and you know what the superhero team is, but then they try to slow play it. It's like, okay, this is the Fantastic Four, but we're not going to say Fantastic Four in the movie. We might say it at the end and we might not like even put a title card on it. We're just going to say like, hey, it's this movie about four superheroes that come from space. And it's like,
no, that's funny. I was just thinking about a movie that did that recently. I was thinking about it recently, but it's an older movie where, especially as a kid, that bothers you and you're confused. Yeah. You know, it's like, what are they doing here? But anyway, no, that was a good talk.
Trip down nostalgia lane.
Yeah. But anyway, these concepts that we're bringing up that make us excited about these shows and movies, it's like, I'm hoping the Gundam live action has this stuff. I love it when a filmmaker's like, how can we make it where someone wants to rewatch this? You know,
right. I mean, because if your entire, you know, if the purpose behind creating a piece of art is that it only is consumed once and then never again, you know, you kind of have to like wonder, is it even worth creating? You know?
Yeah. I feel like maybe there's certain art that's like that, but anything that is made to then be put on display is something that you want to like, you know, jump into.
Yeah.
But hey, let's jump over. Speaking of jumping, I don't know, Gunbreaker 4 is going to have its next, open network test. If you missed out, and it's, August 10th and 11th. So, if you have a PlayStation 4, 5, or Switch, did you happen to get on this at all last time?
I haven't, no. I mean, you know, to me, it's. I'm a little curious why they're having so many open network tests when, you know, is the multiplayer aspect really what is driving Gundam Breaker 4? Like, you and I have kind of talked about this, like, Gundam Breaker as a series is really just, you know, like, an advertisement for Gunpla at the end of the day, right?
I could be wrong. This is my feeling of what it is. I think they're trying to figure out the server capacity because I think there's going to be a big cost there depending on what they're going to get. And they don't want it to go down, but I don't think they want to spend too much on it.
Understandably. Yeah. I think that, I think that the majority of people interested in Gundam Breaker 4 are not going to be interested in the multiplayer, at least, you know, in any like serious competitive capacity, right? Like,
or even at first, because you're going to want to spend your time.
Yeah. They're going to want to grind and get the parts and build their suit and everything. Like the most appealing thing about a Gundam Breaker game is being in the like hangar mode and assembling your mobile suit and everything, you know?
Yeah. And Alter's saying a game like Gundam Breaker is going to be a lot more fun if you're playing it with people though. And that's probably the case. So, and that's the thing, I don't know. Yeah. But see, that's the thing. And I might've missed this if this was in the open network just, but what is the multiplayer? Is it where you could just play through the main game with someone else with you, or is it just competitive stuff? So I think the answers are out there. I just haven't looked them up. So,
yeah. I mean, I see in chat, Ultronimus is saying that the lobbies for the actual matches were kind of trash on PS4. So,
Okay. And then Jim Killex is saying apparently it got a great turnout. So that's actually good to hear.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are hoping that their save progress is going to stay with them from the network tests. But I don't think it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, Ultronimus is saying multiplayer is all co-op outside of the Bounty Hunter mode, which is soft PvP. And then, Alter, like you can just kind of do your single player things except with actual people. So that's cool. I like that it's just integrated. So I could just be online, see someone else. It's like, hey, let's do this real quick. So that's cool. That's cool.
Okay.
All right. Something else to move on to is that Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Freedom will be on Netflix. So
now this is huge.
Yeah. So that's why I wanted to bring this up. I think this is big because when we had the last release for Gundam, which was, well, I guess technically a couple, like there's Witch for Mercury, and it could be that Netflix is like, oh, let's get that on our platform. But Kukru's Doan's Island, they could have also done that. So it's interesting that this is here, but I think it has to do with a bunch of things. One, I bet Seed Freedom is more popular than A Cuckoo's Doan's Island or Witch for Mercury. But then we got Requiem for Vengeance coming out after that. And then that's when they announced the live action movie, the trailer, the cast. You know, I'm guessing here, but I think that's what's going to happen.
I think so, too. I think that we are gearing up for a big announcement, you know, for live action Gundam. And this is just to whet the old appetite.
Well, okay, so let me bring this up. It seems like Requiem for Vengeance is coming out right at the right time, right before a live-action movie, so that, to get people hyped for a live-action movie. And we don't even know if it's going to be in theaters or not. It could just be right on Netflix, so then having Requiem for Vengeance before then just kind of, whets their appetite. But then I feel like Seed Freedom is a different type of Gundam, where someone that's watching Seed Freedom might not like Requiem for Vengeance and vice versa. Do you think that's the case, or do you think that's even a big deal?
No, I mean, I think that you definitely have a point there. You know, there are different types of Gundam fans, and, you know, even if we don't get an announcement for, like, a definitive release date for the Gundam live-action movie, maybe this is, some soft market research. You know, if Netflix has the viewing data for... You know, I think, who is it? Nick in chat says that both of the Seed shows are on Netflix now as well.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Cool.
So you have like all of Seed is available to watch on Netflix. If you're looking at viewer data and you're saying like, okay, there's a huge spike in Requiem for Vengeance, maybe a lesser spike for Seed Freedom, then at least you have some comparative data to say like, okay, maybe a UC story is the right or wrong way to go for the live action movie. But then the other thing that you might be thinking is like, well, what are the global licensing agreements for Netflix having the Seed series, right? Because we knew that they were going to be on Netflix in the Asian region, right?
Yeah. I wonder if this is really just the timing makes it seem like there's a play here, but it's more of, Seed Freedom came out in whenever it did anyway, January. And then in Netflix and other territories, you're right. And then, eventually here.
If you're already going to be on that platform in certain regions, then you might as well, I think you and I mentioned that, like when that announcement was made, we were like, well, if you're going to be on that platform, why not just be on that platform globally?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I bet. Yeah. It has something to do with licensing and all that. So, and you know what, it's very interesting because if they made a live action, either UC or Seed, I think they would be very different.
Definitely.
I almost feel like if it's Seed, you would have to lean into more of the caricature aspect of a character. Whereas I think a UC story would play things much more subtly.
Do you think that they would go full Alita Battle Angel and like artificially enlarge the size of
to be honest, size? If they announced it's a seed movie and they did that, I would think that would be cool just in terms of being new and different, experimenting.
You know, I wish that more movies would kind of get on that sort of experimental visual effects kick, because it does seem like there's only a handful of movies that really push the boundaries of what, you know, we can expect from visual effects. I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Immortals. I think it was actually
is that the French film or
there's a French film called The Immortals, but it's it's Henry Cavill.
Okay.
And it's what's the director's name? The guy that did The Fall.
Tarsem Singh, is that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, Indian director.
Oh, The Cell. Okay.
Yeah, The Cell, fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Terrifying performance by Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
But in that movie, The Immortals, they have this amazing visual effect that I thought that they should have used in like other superhero movies, where it's like when the gods and the titans are fighting each other, there's like this hyper speed up and then slow down, and it's like the visual effects are so cool and unique, where it's like, yeah, I imagine that this is how like gods and superheroes would be fighting, where it's like, you know,
was it kind of like Man of Steel?
Kind of like Man of Steel. Yeah.
I mean, that's the first time I think I saw something like that. And I see what you're saying. I like that. Yeah. It's almost like they're able to defy gravity. Part of their being is that ability, which that's interesting. Is that something that's done? Oh, okay. Now I'm getting, cause I was like, that at a quantum level, how can we, we don't need to get into that.
But no, the reason I bring that up is because it seems like recently when it comes to sci-fi and fantasy movies, even superhero movies and like, you know, TV shows, mm-hmm. the visual effects are kind of boring. Like everything just is so samey, you know,
yeah, it's
nobody's really pushing the boundaries of like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if this looked like this or something like that? And so when Alita Battle Angel came out and it was like, hey, you know, we have this anime character, let's make her look like an anime character in the live action movie. It was interesting. So why not take that same approach with something like Seed, which, you know, you've talked about the visuals are kind of hyper anime. Right. Yeah. Shrink everyone's noses and like,
and that could actually lend to then how the camera would operate. And sort of thing, because it's already in that hyper realistic state. And that reminded me too. So, you know, let's look at Deadpool Wolverine. You would think in a movie, and some of the disappointments I have with the movies, the fact that you would think because it's like a huge deal that they would, okay, we're something we can innovate. And I don't know how much they did innovate, but I do know, like, for instance, when Wolverine would put on his mask, that was all CGI.
Interesting choice. Yeah.
And I think the sleeves, I forget if it was they CGI'd his arms over the sleeves or they CGI'd the sleeves on his arms. Yeah, but I've noticed even after the Flash movie, how much in movies now they CGI people's clothes on. And, you know, the MCU did it with Iron Man, you know. But
there
now
was it's a big deal about, like, Nick Fury's gun.
Oh, what about that?
Like in the Avengers movies, like Nick Fury's gun, he had like basically like this toy pistol. They didn't know what the pistol was going to look like in the final cut. And so all of like Nick Fury. And this is why these movies are going over budget, is they're CGIing the most stupid things, like, oh, we got to take, you know, Henry Cavill's mustache off. We got to make sure that Wolverine can have arms. Like, just put sleeves on the stupid suit. Like, I don't understand.
Oh, that's interesting, because I wonder how much it's like this kind of division of people that are watching movies a lot, so they have an expectation of special effects, but then people that are just using, when you're in the special effects, sometimes you're like, okay, that looks good enough. But then anyone else from the outside would be like, really? Is that what it's going to look like? And then I hear because of budgets, like, then they're like, no, we just have to do it like this. We don't have time to keep making it look good it gets to where I think since these creators think that they can get away with this, then they're like, well, let's just CGI everything.
And I think that, you know, as much as I love George Lucas, it's definitely, you know, that is downstream of George Lucas's like, oh, we'll just fix it in post attitude, right?
And so Jim Kulex is saying they used the sleeves on location but went sleeveless on a soundstage. So I guess on location they didn't want to see people with the sleeveless Wolverine, maybe, and then they Yeah, because I remember I heard something about that. But here's the thing. And I saw someone point this out in the video. Like, the Wolverine costume almost looks amazing, but he should have had the blue shoulder pads
further out.
Yeah. Or at all. Like, when he would be sleeveless, there was no more shoulder pads. And that made no sense. They could have just left on a blue little thing, and that would have just sold the look. But that's the smaller of my nitpicks.
Yeah, I get it.
But the one other thing I wanted to add about, like, the live action movie, how special effects are done. You know, I had this, like, thought of, you know, I'm not too big of a fan of the volume just because how we've seen it look in Star Wars compared to shows on Star Wars that didn't use it. But in scenes where the space is in the background, like when you're in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, or I wish I was, but and then, oh, I was at Disney. Okay. So and then having the LCD screen outside to look like it's space.
Yeah.
I envision that for, like, the Gundam live action movie where they build a Gundam, like, cockpit up, and they have it, like, hanging in a soundstage, and behind it is just the giant space LCD screen, so they can, like, film, like, it opening and people coming out. Like, that's how I would do it anyway, to kind of give off the realistic
look. Yeah, well, that was kind of like how they used CG in the original Jurassic Park movie. And I love going back to this example where it's like, there's the scene that's filmed when you first see the T-Rex that's filmed from inside the car. And the first part of it, when it crosses over that first window, that's when they switch into the CGI version.
So
it's like, when you use framing that way creatively, you can get away with a lot more, I think. And you can, I think it really grounds what you're doing with, like, the CGI, or whether you're using an LCD screen or LED screen, whatever the volume screens are made of these days.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, when you do it in a way that's like with like the Mandalorian, where it's like, oh, we're just going to use it to cast this giant, you know, desert background.
Exactly. Yeah.
You might as well just use a photo, like, just use a giant poster. Like,
oh, yeah. That painting, you know,
it doesn't even make sense. Like, you know, it's sometimes it feels like, you know, we've advanced technology so much when it comes to filmmaking that we use the advanced technology for the most mundane things instead of using it in ways that I think are very, you know, very creative.
Right.
We use it to solve basic problems instead of solving the bigger problems, which is like, how are we going to make this 18 meter tall robot appear in downtown Hong Kong? Like,
yeah, I love thinking about that, because I think more than Pacific Rim, because Pacific Rim leaned more into the fantasy. I just can't wait when they're able to pull off what a mobile suit would look like. Like, I want Gundam, the American Gundam live action movie, to be the movie that puts Mecha on the map for Hollywood. Because I think Pacific Rim tried, and I think more of the kaiju people were into Pacific Rim than the mech people. As a mech person, I like the first one, stopped in the middle of the second one.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it's it definitely appealed to more of that, like, Godzilla. What's the studio? Tonkatsu, or I forget what the name of that is, but that's what it appealed to more than, like, the mech people.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, which is interesting. But anyway, yeah, let's move on to something else here real quick. Now, this is for the Gunpla people out there. This is a new high-grade mobile worker that's going to be a Gundam Base exclusive. So
that'd be awesome.
And we tend to see P Bandai end up selling Gundam Base exclusives, and then you can go to a Gundam Base. So hopefully if you want it, you can get it. But what's interesting is this is a high grade mobile worker, the same that comes with, like, the GM Sniper 2 from 0080, except this is not a 1/44th scale. This is bigger, which is interesting. I didn't see, or if anyone knows, like, what the scale actually is. I'm looking in all the kanji here. If I see numbers, but I see a 10%. I don't know if that's a scale. But what's cool is, like, this is cool because this is Gundam, but this is like a more of the lesser, what am I trying to say? The lesser of the things in the Gundam world that you get to interact with and build. Like, I like that they're making it bigger. too.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that's just due to when you have something that's this small in the actual anime that they're trying to have articulated, you know, it's going to have to be slightly larger. Because I think, I mean, that has to be like maybe 1/35th scale. I it's hard to judge from this.
Yeah, I don't think it comes with a pilot, but it opens up. So that's what's cool about this, because then I'm thought, well, could Steven create and print pilots for this scale? I love how much this is the Power Loader. Like this has
That is 100% Power Loader.
Okay, it's called the Draken E.
Okay.
And this is an example of something I would get because it is so different than the typical Gunpla. And I would like to get it too, to see how it scales like next to the Perfect Grade Granddaddy, to see if like that works.
I like things like this. It depends on the type of collector you are, right? Like if you're the type of person that wants everything perfectly in scale, this is probably not for you, right?
You're not gonna be able to fit it anywhere.
But you know, as someone that only kind of buys the mobile suits that I like or things like that, you know, like for instance, I've got that 1/500th scale Queen Mansa.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that doesn't fit with any of my other model kits, but it's like, it's cool to have just that because
how else would you be able to have a representation of that other than it being scaled down?
Exactly.
So I think you're right here. Like, even though they already have this as a 1/44th scale, you know, it only has 4 points of articulation. This, it's full articulation. And yeah, it allows you to really get down into the gear porn. Remember that?
There you go.
From before. Okay, I'm looking up. Johnny Tacoma is saying probably the same scale as Kyokai Senki.
Mm-hmm. And King Dylan says 1/72nd scale.
Okay, and saying 1/72nd scale. So, I hope we get more information about that.
I would just love to see more of this type of stuff. Like,
yeah, because even they have like ships, but they're all of old models. There hasn't been any recent redone model kits, I think, for any of the ships. I want to see a pack that's like 1/44th scale. Here's 2 DOP fighters. Here's 2 core fighters. Have fun. I would totally have fun with that.
Yeah. I did see over at the Bandai flagship store near me, they have a couple of the gun parries in stock.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember someone posted that.
Expensive, though.
Oh, how much was it? Like 80?
I think they're like $80. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'd do that.
Hey, that's the difference between Adam and I.
Yeah. Well, no, hey, so from chat, when talking about this Kyoku guy, Sinky, I don't know. Dude, that thing looks sick.
It's pretty awesome.
It reminds me of, you know, some Metal Gear mecha action with a little bit of
little Armored Core in there.
Yeah, Armored Core, even like Witch from Mercury style, like
with the shoulders.
Yeah. That looks cool. I haven't really dived into other mecha model kits, but I might do something like this.
Definitely. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. So yeah, that's about it for like all the stuff we were going to cover today. I wonder if there's anything else we can talk about as we have the remaining 10 minutes or so.
We talk about the saddest news in Gundam this week?
What's that?
Is that they discontinued the RE100 line.
Oh, you brought that up. Where did you see this? On Twitter?
I saw on Twitter that I don't know what the official source was, but yeah, they are discontinuing the RE100 line. I guess, you know, it wasn't a hot seller, which is such a shame because it's like, just as I was hyping up the RE100s as like, you know, these are great, you know, customized kits for you, but
I wonder, can
understand why they would.
What do you think? Because you don't think people are buying them as much?
Yeah, you know, because the RE100 line is, you know, they're 1/100th scale model kits that they don't want to put the money into making like a full blown master grade, right? But like as a result of that, a lot of the RE100 mobile suits are typically things that people wouldn't want, right?
Yeah, so that's what's interesting because, like, I'm with you. I would be getting these RE100 kits, and they're like really good because it's not too much to it, but they still look great. But then, like, for non-UC Gundams, if they were releasing a Master Grade, it wouldn't be called Master Grade, right? Except for Seed, but, like, IBO or Witch for Mercury, those scales were just RE100.
Yeah, you know, it's like if you ever wanted a 1/100 scale G Gundam, well, Gundam, like, RE100 would be the way to go, right? And we talk about this a lot with, like, P-Bandai in general, where it's, like, P-Bandai is where a lot of these mobile suits that are never going to get, like, a mainstream release end up going. And so I think what it's going to result in is that we're just not going to get 1/100th scale mobile suits that are not, like, mainline.
Even if they're not mainline, if they're not a main character. Because I find it interesting how there's not a bunch of Witch for Mercury kits that are 100 scale, unless I'm missing something. I think it's just the main kit.
Just the aerial.
The aerial. Same with IBO, isn't it? Where IBO, it's just the RE100. They don't have, like, any Master Grade.
Not to my knowledge. I guess there's technically the MGSD Barbatos. Isn't that one?
Oh, yeah. That's right. They have a Master Grade of an SD. So, but I wonder, do you think they are sort of maybe scaling back on 100 scale stuff?
Possibly. I mean, I think that their HG sales are probably through the roof right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I was even watching another video where someone was talking about how well not only did the Seed Freedom Gumpla turn out, but how popular they were. And I agree, they look fantastic. I can't wait for, I was just looking on another website the other day, the Murasame, you know, the one that looks like a Zeta.
I'm definitely gonna pick one of those up just to paint it in Zeta colors.
Oh, so that is a cool idea. I didn't think about that, but that's, yeah. I actually like the color scheme it has.
Yeah, with the gray and red.
Yeah, compared to most. Yeah, I was like, that's actually pretty good.
And let's face it, like, the high grade line has come so far as like the engineering goes. Like,
yeah, it has.
There's really not a whole lot you can do at 1/100th scale beyond the stuff that you see in, like, Master Grades and Perfect and Grades,
where it's like, more.
And
yeah. So your Vargwill, for instance, is a high grade, but it just looks so good because of the details that are already on it.
Oh yeah, the knee joints on that thing are insane. Oh, like, okay. It's got, like, basically a triple knee joint. So it's like there's a sliding hinge inside the calf that slides up, and then the knee itself bends, and then there's a third bend. So I mean, you get, like, full. Let's see how far, like, we can bend this thing. It's like,
wow.
You can get some pretty cool poses out of this.
You know what? That's interesting. Unless it's not an accident, the leg looks like a unicorn leg. Or did I just see it from a certain angle?
I mean, I think it does have, like, a slight unicorn-esque
appearance
to it.
Yeah, maybe time period. Mm-hmm. Wait, do we happen to know who designed the Unicorn Gundam?
Wasn't it, like, the Vist? Or, you mean, like, the actual designer?
Yeah. Oh, Katoki. Unless they're just saying he designs everything.
He does everything these days.
Oh, no, no one is saying it. Yeah. Cool. Well, cool. Almost everything in Unicorn was his doing. That's pretty impressive. But you hate him, so.
Well, there you go. That explains why I don't like Unicorn.
So we'll probably end the show. Anything coming up soon that's interesting? I mean, I think the main thing is to have people watch us with Kyle on the Simply New Type. Free Speech Geek. He is the Simply New Type guy, but on Free Speech Geek, which I need to start linking to that. Oh, speaking of links, you can check in the description. There's that P-Rex, I think, company in Canada. I have, like, a promo code because there is this, like, affiliate thing or something, as, you know, a creator where you can, like, get links for, you know, whatever. But the idea here is they ship to Canada. I think they're based in Canada, so
they're based in Vancouver. And actually, one of the big shout outs that I'm going to give to P-Rex Hobby is that they are one of the few vendors in Canada that sells P-Bandai.
Okay, so yeah, that's a big deal, and so that's why I wanted to promote them. I posted it in the YouTube post, but it's in. So yeah, if you're in Canada and you need to get some stuff finally, because I hear it a lot from people from Canada that say how hard it is to get stuff. So,
dude, I you know, I've sent stuff to some of our Canadian Gunpla friends, and I'm like, this is absurd. Like, yeah, sending a high grade kit to Canada cost more than double what the kit itself costs, and I was like, this is stupid.
I know it is. It's too bad that it's like that, but hopefully that helps people.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's about it. Thanks everyone for watching. And again, you know, check the links in the description so you can keep connected with Steven and I and Kyle between Free Speech Geek, Midnight Hatter, Gundam Explained, but also Blue Gamer, my video game show. So it's a whole MCU over here.
There you go. We need to start phase two. Stay tuned for, you know, all the actor announcements. We're going to be bringing back the actor that played Kyle. And he's going to be playing a villain in the new phase of the.
To have Robert Downey Jr. Play himself, reacting to everything happening in his universe. Like, why do these people look like me?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, geez.
Anyway, like
being John Malkovich.
Oh, Ultronimus, I like this GPU Gundam podcast universe. Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right, guys, we're going to head out. This was a lot of fun, but see you guys later.
Have a good one. Thank you all. Cheers.